I'm Jeff Meyerson, and this is the QuoraCast. Ron Mayman is one of the most divisive characters Quora has seen. Many of his posts contain helpful explanations of topics within physics, biology, and math. When he responds to a question, Ron's answer is usually propelled to the top. But his harsh demeanor frustrates some users, and others find his science unconvincing. Ron was recently blocked by moderators and is departing from the site. Prior to the event that got him banned, Ron and I were already planning to have a conversation. While I'm happy that I got to hear his side of the story, I was equally interested in his motivations as a human being, and why he comes off as abrasive in some of his online interactions. Ron Mayman, welcome to the QuoraCast.
Thank you.
So you were recently blocked from posting any edits on Quora. Do you think you could give your explanation of the event that led to that blocking?
Yeah, the major reason was that I was involved in editing a answer regarding the Boston bombing. My description is that I'm a truther. This was a description that I chose about 3 or 4 weeks after the Boston bombing in response to seeing the press photos from that bombing, which, without any question, were not legitimate photographs of injuries and of death.
What leads you to believe that, they're not legitimate?
I mean, you have to look at the photos yourself. They are not legitimate injuries of injury and death. There were legitimate injuries and deaths. I'm not denying that there was a bomb exploding there. But the photos that the press showed were a very carefully orchestrated catalog of something out of a horror movie. It was just not a bad quality one, I should point out. Not even a very good horror movie. I've seen a lot of terrorist attacks. I grew up in Israel, and I've also seen firsthand actual murder. I know what blood on the street looks like. I know what corpses look like. I'm not happy that I know it. I know what they look like. It's not an issue. I know what they look like under many circumstances. They never look like this ridiculous nonsense you saw in the press photos from the Boston bombing. And this issue was pointed out by many, many, many people. There was a heavy discussion on 4chan the day of the attack when they were trying to figure out who did it. And on 4chan, they had hundreds of people send in their photos. I wasn't involved in that directly. I saw the 4chan discussion a few weeks later, actually. But the 4chan discussion was happening on the day of the attack, maybe a day later. And 4chan is distributed. It's not controlled by any central organization. There's nobody there who's the boss of the investigation or anything like that. There's no central media that they have to report to. And the 4chan reports were very clear that there was a drill going on at the same time. At the time, I wasn't a truther, I should point out. This was when I became a truther, was when I saw what was going on at the 4chan discussion. This 4chan uncontrolled discussion with absolutely no moderating or controlling authority. And the witness testimonies about the drill were very clear. There were witness testimonies from runners who had talked about the drill announcement. There were witness testimonies from people in the audience who said there was a drill announcement. Be calm, stay still, there's a drill. There were photos of the drill personnel. There were photos of the bomb-sniffing dogs for the drill. There was photos of very great.
What is the drill? What do you mean by the drill?
A drill, a pretend bomb drill. In other words, there was just some drill going on from FEMA or the FBI or both organizations together where they were just pretending that there was going to be a bomb. Not a real bomb, just a pretend to see how the responders would react and so forth. The drill evidence is extremely clear. There's an example of a photograph of a guy on 4chan with a radiation detector. It's a device that is used to detect radiation. Now, there's no radiation in the actual bombs. It's just a training exercise for what happens if someone sets off a radiologically contaminated bomb. That there was a drill going on, I don't think can be disputed by any sane person. Yet everyone in the Boston area, everyone in the Boston government has denied that there was a drill.
Is there a history on 4chan of suspicion of these types of events?
No.
They were completely doing this for other reasons, because the FBI asked the public to help with identifying the bombers. And
right. I mean, I remember that. I'm just talking about in terms of the culture on 4chan.
No, 4chan has nothing to do with that. I don't even know the culture of 4chan. It's something to do with... I'm not a participant. You have to ask the 4chaners. But no, they're not in any way affiliated with anything truth-ish or at all. They just were trying to figure out who did it. And very quickly, they noticed that there were a bunch of big men with big backpacks and skull logos who are clearly contractors. They actually were identified quickly as what used to be called Blackwater. I think it's called something else now. There are these contractors that the government hires. And the black backpacks that these folks had match the pictures of the detonated backpack. It's not even very difficult to see. Now, I'm not going to go with any story that conflicts with evidence of my own eyes. And the 4chan evidence is up there on the internet. It's everyone can review it. It's extremely clear. And there is no chance of any type of doctrine or fabrication with this, because it happened extremely quickly. It happened within a few days after the attack and without any intent. It's not a forum for discussing these types of things. It just happens to be a picture sharing forum where they could share pictures.
Okay. So,
and I just found it by accident, because I Googled the Boston bombing for curiosity 3 weeks after the event, because I didn't watch the news. I don't have a TV.
Right.
And so I look at these pictures, and the first thing that struck me is, first of all, the obvious drill, which was suspicious. I mean, not just suspicious, impossible, because the drill announcement about the events of the drill coincided with the bombing. And I know how terrorists behave. I mean, I lived in Israel, and I know what they do. They don't like to be around police. They don't like to be around bomb-sniffing dogs. I see a bunch of official guys, they go bomb something all their time. They don't hang out next to those guys like our bombers do. I mean, it's nonsense. And it's not only that, why would they have such a sensitive drill at the exact same place at the exact same time to the minute of the actual bombing? It doesn't make any sense. And it's not because it's the Boston Marathon. There's never was a drill the previous years. They ask runners this. It's not because there's a lot of other marathons. There's a New York Marathon. It's not just marathons. I mean, there's not a drill at each one of these events, and this drill coincides in time, place, location. It is not.
So I mean, I understand. I understand where you're coming from.
But this is important, because it's not reasonable. When you get this type of anomaly, then the public tends to laugh it off. I mean, I laughed it off when it happened on 9/11. I remember in 2002 when the drill stories broke. I just didn't, you know, I was like, okay, weird coincidence. And Bush said the same thing. He said, well, that was an uncanny coincidence. They were doing all these simulations of terrorist attacks involving planes and so forth so close to the time of the attacks on the same day even. It does seem like a very jarring coincidence when it happens once, but when it happens twice and you see it with your own eyes, then you can't accept this. It's not within, it's beyond the realm of statistical coincidence. It enters another realm.
So I really do see where you're coming from, and I'm not just saying that. Like, I understand that what you're saying is a valid conclusion. Like, whether or not I agree with it, like, I understand.
You don't have to agree. This is not for you. This is for the rest
I know,
of the
I know. What I'm actually more curious about is...
I'd like
is,
to proceed, please, because I know what happened on Quora.
Okay,
so
sure.
Regarding the 4chan events, there were also photographs that were released to the press of a man with a cowboy hat and a fellow who supposedly had his legs blown off. And the photographs of the crime scene do not look like any terrorist crime scene. They look like fake blood, fake injuries, fake corpses. Everything is fake. Now, that's not saying that there was not a real bomb. There was a real explosion there that killed people, killed a Chinese girl, killed a... I think there was another small boy or small girl that was killed. There were people killed, and there were people with legs blown off, and it's a terrible thing. But the pictures that were released to the press were of a different kind. They were propaganda pictures with artificially exaggerated injuries done by people who were just made to give you a good photo to make propaganda with. And this is not something that I can discuss without showing the photos. I can't discuss an audio, but I encourage people to actually just look at the pictures. Now, on that question on Quora that came up, there was a question about the Boston bombing. And given the state, the nature of American politics today, it's very difficult to speak about truth or matters because people feel threatened in their job security, people feel threatened with their friends, their relatives, you know, whatever. They just don't want to talk about it because it's in no one's interest to promote the truth. It's in your interest just to shut up and go along with whatever everyone else believes. And this tendency tends to amplify any official media story, even when that story is manipulated in some way. Now, I'm not saying that all of these media people are in a gigantic conspiracy. They're not, but they have no money. The press is starved for money since the internet came on. There's very little investigative reporting money, and it's not like we have Woodward and Bernstein running around for 2 years looking at Watergate. I mean, now we have a press that's much more reliant on official pronouncements and will tend to go along with any story so long as they don't have to do any work to investigate it because that costs money.
And so this is why it's very important to you to be serious on Quora about getting your opinion, what you think out there, and being very adamant about it.
I mean, look, this is why it's important. Sure, but that's not really my personal motivation. My personal motivation is that I'm an early Usenet guy, and one of the things about early Usenet in 1992, the internet was a bunch of news groups. That's all there was. And I was in the physics news group and a bunch of other news groups, and I just noticed that online it's very, very, very much easier to counter any official quote-unquote propaganda. I mean, I wasn't countering propaganda. I was countering physics half-truths that the sort of academic community believes, but it's the same sort of thing. So in physics, you know, there was a bunch of theories that were dismissed in the 1950s, like one of them is the Everett Many Worlds interpretation. It had a very bad reputation back in 1992. And just with a little bit of online propaganda, you could tell people what it's really all about, that it doesn't deserve its reputation, so forth and so on, and it quickly became rehabilitated, and it's now considered a classic in its own right. I mean, that wasn't me. I mean, there were a bunch of other people doing this too, and it was Gelman, and there were famous people doing it. It's not just nobody's. But the internet has this potential, which is that it's able to quickly correct any misinformation. And this power is underutilized. So my goal is just to find all the misinformation I can find and very quickly just put it out. I mean, it's very easy to counter misinformation. If I make a mistake, it's also very easy to counter me.
But the thing is, if you're overly provocative and you get yourself banned from a place like Quora, doesn't it undermine your ability to continue doing that?
Yes, I agree, but let me tell you exactly what happened. It doesn't quite undermine, because in order to have this process work, it is extremely important that the tone is hostile, that it's like a court of law, where you have an adversarial relationship with your opponent. Because if you have a friendly relationship with your opponent, then, I don't want to say, political consensus is preserved. There is no way to overturn a political consensus. Look, if the political consensus is right, which it is right like 95% of the time, it's no problem. I mean, if people say, well, did people really land on the moon? And yes, they really did. So the political consensus is justified. And if you have a debate, it very quickly ends. It'll be okay, yes, they did.
I don't know. I feel like I have seen
in the case,
cases of intellectual progress on Quora without as much friction as I kind of saw it in this event.
Oh, yeah. I go to the limits, and this is important for me because it lets me know what kind of forum we're dealing with. If it's an adversarial forum, then one can make progress. That's my firm belief, because I've seen adversarial forums succeed in displacing authoritative pronouncements that were incorrect in fields where there can be no dispute because they're objective fields. So in physics, you know, you can't debate whether UNRWA radiation and Hawking radiation are related by redshift. But there are people saying it wasn't true, or the equivalence principle fails at the horizon. And it's just, this is an objective fact. They are not right, but it was still the majority of the field, not because of any conspiracy, but just because they never checked it. I mean, they never calculated it. So you show the calculation, But still people say, well, then why don't all the experts say it? Or they point you to sources that say otherwise. Some nonsense other than just sitting down and checking the calculation. So you can tell using a test of an objective field, physics or mathematics, someplace where you can be, where you have objective facts. You can see how politics works, and you can see what is necessary to correct an untruth that is politically popular. And unfortunately, when you're in a minority, or a minority of even a very small minority, the only way to correct the consensus view is to just shout it and repeat it until people actually go and look and check for themselves. The reason is it creates an adversarial atmosphere where people have to pick sides. And they don't like to pick sides. They would rather have everyone be happy. So when you have to pick sides, what do? You either butt out, you just don't leave it alone, you run away, or you sit and review the evidence until you know which side to pick. And that requires evaluating the objective evidence neutrally. And the only way to force that to happen is to have a confrontation. It just doesn't happen naturally. And this is not a thing that I invented. I mean, I wish I did, but it's a sort of a enshrined principle of physics culture. I mean, it's very old. It probably dates back to Pauli and Einstein, but Einstein was very political, though he wasn't like Pauli. But Pauli was the one that made it an official policy to bluntly and dismissively attack a position that he felt to be intellectually vapid or without any evidence. And this meant being rude. There's no better way to put it. He would just be rude. He was wrong sometimes, too, when he was rude. I mean, I'm not saying he was always right. I mean, he was most of the time he was right because he's Pauli and he's very, very, very good. But,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, the thing is, I'm not sure I agree with the idea that there's kind of this, like, black and white of...
I know, but I'm not trying to convince you. I'm just trying to state the position.
Right.
So the point of Pauli rudeness is to make sure that a fraudulent or political consensus cannot be maintained. And this is a godsend for the field of physics. It's something that has differentiated the discourse in physics from the discourse in nearly every other field, with the exception of a few other STEM fields like chemistry or to some extent mathematics, although not to as much an extent as I would like. But in physics, it's the pristine thing, because Pauli was really an asshole, and he made a mandate. If you want to do physics, you have got to be an asshole. When someone says bullshit, you have to stand up and say, what you've done.
But that's physics. I mean, look, I understand that with physics, like...
I want to tell you why. It's not because it's physics. It's because of this that physics is what it is. This is the culture of physics that is used to remove the political barriers to overturning established consensus, and this is why physics was able to make progress. It's not because physics is so objective. Honestly, if you look at the debates in physics, a lot of them could have stretched out forever. The debate about nuclear electrons, which was settled with the discovery of the neutron, could have stretched out forever, because neutrons are extremely hard to detect. Okay, they're neutral. They go through things. They decay to hydrogen, and you have to... It's crazy hard to detect neutrons. Neutrons are very, very weird particles. People could have argued that there's no neutrons, that there are electrons in the nuclei. But, you know, Pauli was around. He would say, look, the evidence is clear. This guy discovered a new particle. There is a neutron. And people broke up.
But, I mean, we're not. The thing is, we're not talking about physics. I mean, we're talking about... We're talking about a news event where... Like it or not, there is some subjectivity. I mean, there's because there's
subjectivity. Look, in physics, the only reason that physics, I don't want to say it, the difference between physics and the other things is not the fact that the other things are not as objective as physics, although that is true. The difference is because physics has objective tests and ends up eventually experimentally confirming the correct idea, the physicists have developed a discourse by evolution, by social evolution, which very quickly gets rid of the incorrect idea, even when there isn't a test yet.
But how is that a counter argument? Because if you're talking about so
principle of human social organization that is revealed only when you have an objective test, but the principle is universal. It's not only true.
So, but no, because the thing is, you're comparing. You're comparing a field that where the discourse has been built on something that's objective, and here we're talking about a field that's you know, the discourse is around this Boston Marathon bombing event, which is has a little more subjective information because we're going off of news and photos and things from different perspectives.
Correct. The subjectivity of the subject matter is not the important thing. The important thing to understand is that the discourse has to be adversarial and direct in order to produce a situation where politics cannot operate. That's the lesson of the physics. That lesson doesn't stop at physics. It's universal. But that lesson happened to come from physics because in physics there was a tremendous amount of progress. And it's progress that didn't always happen in situations where you could convince everybody. The progress in physics was not always through experiments overruling somebody. There was theoretical progress, a great deal of it, that predated the experiment. The W and Zs, when they were discovered in 1980, no one was surprised. Okay? They already were known and agreed to be there in 1974 when the Standard Model was formulated through the politics in the field. Because the politics was rude, it's hostile. And it's not just Pauli, I would like to say. The physicists have inculcated generation after generation to be dismissive.
So I see what you're saying, and it sounds like a big motivation for this adversarialism is it.
It's not a motivation. It's just I'm telling you where it comes from. It's not a motivation for me.
The thing is there's already so much sensitivity built into this topic. That I think it's, you know, if
yeah,
you want...
Yeah, that sensitivity is exploited by politics to produce false consensus.
I don't disagree. But the thing is that it makes it more dodgy to try to justify making it an even more adversarial debate.
The debate always has to be adversarial. There's
but
nothing
it's all,
you can do
it's,
about
it. I mean, it's, the thing is, I think the adversarialism injects emotion into it. And the emotion makes it, makes for a... Maybe a more fueled debate, but if there's already all this emotion
Wait
with
a second, oh, I'm sorry. Everything injects emotion into it. Okay, mentioning that your friend had her leg blown off injects emotion into
right,
it.
Right, that's my emotion point. Empathy.
Yeah, there's no way to avoid emotion. Emotions are always there. Even if you don't mention the emotion, you create an emotion of deference to authority. The default emotion for human beings is deference to authority. In order to challenge that, one has to create a situation where there is no authority. And in an argument which is extremely blunt and very hostile, and there's sides, nobody has any authority. I mean, it's not like I get any authority from this. When people read my stuff, they think I'm a lunatic. And they don't think that I'm a sane guy with a reasoned point of view.
Well,
I
think that the, you know, on the contrary, like, the reason that a lot of your posts that are kind of on the fringe get credence is because a lot of your other posts are so well grounded in fact and clear understanding of the knowledge at hand.
Yeah, trust me, the ones in the fringe are just as grounded in fact. You just can't see it because you have authority clouding your ability to evaluate the evidence. The thing that makes the other posts different from the what you call the fringe posts, the only difference between them is the authority structure of society, whether it supports the view or it opposes it. My so-called grounded post, I hardly ever write a post that does not conflict some expert opinion or other. Although most of the time, the experts that happen to be on Quora are clever enough to see that I'm not saying nonsense. But the I've tried to never be not... I mean, unless it's a really short one-liner to answer some student's question or something, I try to not say anything that would not be disputed by somebody. And that includes, for example, I'll give you an example. Just recently, I was asking a string of questions about Pauli exclusion and the hardness of matter. While it is well known to experts in the field that the hardness of matter is due to Pauli exclusion as the founding principle, look, there's an interplay between electronic repulsion and Pauli exclusion, but the Pauli exclusion is the reason why matter takes up volume. It's why Aristotle said no two things can occupy the same space at the same time. It's not because no two things can occupy the same space at the same time. Photons can occupy the same space at the same time. It's because electrons can't be in the same quantum state fundamentally. No two electrons can be in the same quantum state. That's the fundamental principle that leads to the hardness of matter. The problem is that this is denied in nearly all condensed matter books due to the peculiarity of the interplay of the forces when two things come in contact, the electrostatic repulsion, the Pauli exclusion. It's not obvious in the actual calculations of two atoms meeting which one is dominating, whether it's the exclusion force or the repulsion force. But there's a very clear answer from the argument of Dyson in the 60s about what would happen to bosonic matter, so that you really understand that the fundamental deep reason why the clouds don't, why the objects repel when they touch is because of Pauli exclusion. Yet nonetheless, if you read in any popular book, if you read in any text for the past 30 years, I think actually Carl Sagan started this in Cosmos when he said it was electronic repulsion, you will find that people will attribute the hardness of matter to electronic repulsion. And that's why I write about it, because I know there's disinformation out there. Now, in this case, nobody's legs were blown off, but it's still combating a dogma. It's just the dogma that not so many people get riled up about. Now, the issue with my comments regarding this stuff are no less harsh when it's in physics. It's just that people don't see it that way, because in that case, the emotions are not directly linked. And also, frankly speaking, it's a better educated readership. And with regard to the Boston bombing, it's a general readership, and it's a very sensitive topic because it's a hot button. It's a propaganda issue. Now, with regard to the actual thing that got me banned, a lady by the name, I forgot her name, but she's a CEO of some kind, according to her profile, and I believe it because you can't get away with saying that. I mean, I couldn't claim to be CEO of anything. This lady had a friend who was injured in the Boston bombing. When I wrote, please, look at these photos. They are not real. This is illegitimate propaganda with fake blood.
Wait,
fake
what question was it? Like,
The question regarding the Boston bombing. The question itself was, why is Dokhar Tsarnaev going to... why did someone suggest this? Should Dokhar Tsarnaev be given a trial in a court of law rather than a tribunal? Or why are people proposing that he be given a trial in a tribunal? And the person who was proposing it was Lindsey Graham. And the answer I gave was because he's innocent. And this is indeed the case. I mean, Dokhar Tsarnaev, if you had a fair trial, you could take those photographs, get an expert to come in and say, that's not blood. Look at the injuries, say those injuries are completely ridiculous. Look at the corpse, say those are not corpses. And that would establish not that there was no explosion, because there was an explosion, but that those photos that we saw were part of something else going on that day. And if there were two things going on that day, that's ridiculous. That other thing is definitely the same thing as the bombing thing. And you can't have two things going on, one fake and one real, without the fake one being the same as the real one. It's nonsense. It does not, and of course, then the pictures would come out of these bomb people. They would be subpoenaed. Backpack people, the people with the black backpacks, the Blackwater guys, they would be subpoenaed. The drill coordinator would be subpoenaed. The witnesses who heard the drill would be subpoenaed. That is what would happen in a court of law. And to avoid this, which is the only way to avoid incredible embarrassment, what do people say? Hold a military tribunal so that the evidence is closed, evidence by hearsay can be admitted.
So this is what you wrote in your response?
Yeah, more briefly. So this response annoyed a lot of people. They said, well, it's not a hoax. My friend had her leg blown off. My response to this was, how do I know you're not a shill? And that's what got me blocked. I don't know. I mean, I should have looked at her profile. If I were to say CEO, blah, 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 I would have supposed probably not a shill, but I really don't know if she's a shill. But the important thing is there is that I created a confrontational adversarial attitude right off the bat. And she explained to me that she wasn't a shill. My next response was, okay, you're not a shill. Listen, I actually said there was a real bomb in my response. I would have said, look, I know your friend got injured. It's okay. I mean, it's not about your friend. It's about the pictures in the newspaper, which we know are fabricated. It's about the evidence in this case, which is non-existent or doctored. It's about clear signs of evidentiary tampering, and there's no way you can argue against it. It's not a predominance of evidence thing. The government has a pile of hearsay that they claim, okay, no actual thing. The witness against Dokhar Tsarnaev is the same guy with his bogus leg injury. That's the only guy. He's the guy who pointed out Tsarnaev. The
photographic evidence that they have would never hold up in a court of law. It's complete nonsense. The stuff they said about the shootings and so forth is contradicted by photographic evidence. It's contradicted by witnesses. There is nothing they could present in a court of law that would hold water. And the fact that it's also just because he's innocent, not because he got away with it. It's because he didn't do it. This guy is not the Boston bomber. The guy who did the Boston bombing was the guy who ordered that same stupid bogus drill that we saw in the news that day. It's the same guy. There's no chance it's two separate events by coincidence on the same day. Although my bet is that anyone who's involved in that drill prefers to believe that, so they don't have to think they're part of this. Because they aren't part of this. It's not like everyone knows about it in advance. They just do what they're told, and okay, there was a real bombing at the same time as the drill. What a coincidence. I'm going to go home and forget about it. The same thing happened in 9/11 also, when people said, you know, there were all these drills going on. NORAD had all these planes in the sky. We had blips all over our radar screens. And then we had a real hijacking to deal with in addition. I mean, there's a limit to a person's credibility. This should be it. However, that's not it for everybody. Anyway, so I got banned for attacking this lady, probably, to be frank, because she's a, you know, she's a CEO. These are Quora. It's a business. They don't want to make enemies among other business people or CEOs. I mean, it's, it makes sense. I mean, she, by the way, if I would have known she was a CEO, I would have kept my mouth shut.
Okay, because that's what I was going to say is, I mean, it, you clearly find Quora to be at least you know, engaging or intellectually profitable or however you want to put it. But
no, I feel the need to propagandize. I mean, I did my duty. I propagandized.
No, I understand that, but that I don't think that's mutually exclusive with.
I mean, I only look. What? Why do I like Quora? Quora has never ever censored me one bit. The only exception is when some individual user decides to block my comments. That's it. And that's not their administratorship. And I was stunned by this because, look, I mean, it was true on Stack Exchange for a while, but there was always comment deletion and so forth. It was true on Wikipedia forever. I mean, from 2005 to 2009, I just essentially wrote whatever the hell I wanted. I wrote as many pages as I wanted with whatever content I wanted. No one touched it because I had equations in it. They couldn't read it, okay? But I mean, it's true. It's because they're too stupid. They're administrators. They're too stupid to read anything. That's why physics papers, by the way, are full of equations. Not because everything has to be said in a way. They could explain to you, if you took a typical physics paper, about 80% you could replace equations with text. They don't do that for a specific reason. They don't want an idiot to be able to understand the paper. They want to make sure you know all the basic stuff, so they don't explain it to you. You have to know already what these equations mean. It's a political ploy to exclude, frankly, dumb people. You don't want them reading your paper. Go away, you know? So then Wikipedia worked like a charm. I mean, if you ever had a problem with a moderator, you would just fill the page with equations and they'd go away. But eventually the moderators got smart to this, and then, you know, okay, Citation Required got on. And, you know, it's, but and then the content stopped coming. So Stack Exchange was also very good in this regard because it was a question-answer forum. It was voted by a community of people who basically knew what they were doing because they were on a physics forum, you know? So on the Physics Stack Exchange, I was stunned, you know, because I'll tell you, when I went to Stack Exchange after Wikipedia was gone, after it was taken over, and I also got myself blocked during the takeover by yelling at people to unblock some other guy or whatever. I got myself blocked. Good riddance. I'm glad I'm blocked. They put a very big diatribe there. Then I went to Stack Exchange. I was like, oh, fine, that's the next free forum. So Stack Exchange was indeed a pretty good free forum, but it was full of bad answers and so forth. They just went up the downvote and said, what the hell are you doing? This is total crap. And they did that in like maybe 100 answers. And then, you know, they got downvoted and some of them disappeared.
Did you get blocked?
No. I everyone loved me. They were like, oh, finally someone told them that it was crap. We were, you know, they needed the peer review. You know, it's like nobody wants to make enemies. So I love making enemies, okay? Because it is crap. I mean, if I made a mistake, then of course you'll say, no, it's not crap. You don't know this and this and that. I learned it and they'll be like, oh, yeah, sorry, excuse me, and I delete my comment. But, I mean, usually it is crap. It's some nutcase, right? You know, his theory about light being waves and his amniotic fluid or whatever. You know, these crazy people. So or that's not the only people. There's also legitimate mistakes made by physicists, but, you know, because they heard it somewhere, repeat it a million times, like electrons move slowly down a wire. Okay, that comes from a 1910 Drude model, which is like obsolete now for 100 years, but nobody bothered to update the textbooks. I mean, it's been obsolete since Fermi, so not 100, 80 years. So it's obsolete for 80 years, no one updated the textbooks, because it's such a simple model, and it's so cute, and everyone loves it, because it's classical, everyone can understand it, and you get a counterintuitive result, you know? The electrons go a centimeter per second down the wire. Yeah, it's counterintuitive, but it's also wrong. I mean, it doesn't help if you show somebody something counterintuitive, and it's wrong. I mean, you want to show people things are counterintuitive and right. But anyway, so Stack Exchange got its peer review by me, but it's not just me. There was another really great guy, Lubos Modal, who is on the dick meter. I mean, on the asshole meter, I think he exceeds me. I mean, he's an extremely big dick, and I want to say that is a statement of complete and utter respect, because I love him to death. I mean, he's a very good physicist. He's got wrong ideas about global warming, we know, but they're not as wrong as people make them out. He knows CO2 causes warming. He just doesn't believe that it's caused as much warming as we see, or what. I don't know his exact position. It's not true, but it's not as ludicrous as people make it out to be. I mean, he has right wing views that are extremely offensive to me and to others, but I forgive him because he has very, very solid physics results, including real classics. I mean, really, really classic papers. Anyway, the moderators step in and they block the hostile discussion. They don't want a confrontational tone whenever they come close to IPO or if someone's reviewing their site. If there's a businessman looking over their site, business and confrontation are oil and water. Whenever there's a person who knows how to make money, a financier, I shouldn't say a stock trader because they're confrontational a different way, but whenever there's somebody who knows how to shake hands and make business deals, they see confrontation and they see danger. They see poison. But that's the foundation of science. I mean, it's Galileo making fun of the Aristotelians. It's Pauli mocking the people who, God knows what, who proposed Yang-Mills theory and didn't admit that it was zero mass. I mean, this is what science is all about. It's a confrontational activity and it requires honest, direct confrontation.
Yeah, I totally understand that. I'm actually... I want to spend some time in this episode, like, talking about your past and like how you kind of developed into the person that you are right now.
Oh, sure.
Okay. All right. Cool. There's a question on Quora where you said you took a vow of poverty when you were very young.
I was 10. I mean, most people would give it up, but I mean, I figured I never had any need to give it up, so. I just kept with it. I mean, I never was really offered that much more. When we started the startup, I think I was offered 50K. I said, no, I'll keep it 40K. I took a vow. And then they gave me 40K. And then that sort of set an example. So the CEO also took 40K. It was a very good thing because we had very little money. We were a startup and we were going by seed money. And it was very good to keep the salary. I mean, the folks with children got a little more. But yeah, that was very good.
Had you not continued with this, with the same vow?
Yeah, no, I've always done it. I'm never going to change. I mean, at the moment I run no risk of accidentally being given more than 40K. I mean, it's not like the people are begging to throw money at my door. So it's harmless, but I will continue with it until I Unless there's hyperinflation.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you could put yourself in a position to make more than 40K if you had the motivation. But it just sounds like
I have plenty of motivation. You can't do the stuff I do without motivation. It's just that.
The motivation to make more money.
Yeah. No, I. It's not that I have a fear of it because everyone I've seen who makes money goes, their brain rots. No offense. I mean, I've met rich people. They're smart rich people. Very good students, you know, but the money just decays. It's a poison. I don't know what to say.
Did you see that early on? Is that what led you to?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, I could see that people were chasing all this money, and the ones who got it were destroyed. So I was like, well, why are they chasing this? Like, chasing after the guns so you can shoot yourself? I just still don't understand, because the moment you have money, you have all these responsibilities. Okay, even if you give it away, you're like Bill Gates. You spend half your life giving away money, and you have to figure out what the person who's getting it is doing with it. You have to go to, like, I don't know, some place in Africa and see if your straws are being used properly. Or
but I mean, there's also so much stress associated with not having enough money.
It depends on where you live. I mean, and depends on honestly. And look, if I was homeless on the street, I'd probably not speak this glibly about it, honestly, because there are people who suffer from that. I know what, but I'm not in dire poverty at the moment. It's not like I'm a homeless person, and my family, by the time I finished college, was not that badly off. It's not, they're not rich, but they're not poor, and they're just well-to-do. But I mean, it's like they're not rich. They're just, they have assets. My parents invested in houses or whatever. But they didn't make millions. They just invested in a few properties. But I see people destroyed by money. I don't want to be destroyed by money. I have research to do. If I don't do it, I feel like I've wasted my life. And if I have money, I won't be doing research. I'll be doing money. My brother is a professor. He's got a ton of money now with his lab. What does he do all day? Thinks about the money. He can't sit and do an about this all the time. A friend of mine became professor at Syracuse. Well, when she does this, she has to think about all these money things. And it's, I mean, I wouldn't mind being a professor, but I will tell you that the money aspects are just very debilitating. I mean, I just prefer to be, also I come cheap. I mean, it's good because it means I can join a startup and not worry or get hired by a guy and he can pay me basically a low postdoc salary and not have to ever worry about raising it. So
that's kind of a segue, because I was trying to think about who do you aspire to become? I mean, obviously you do a lot of research, you do a lot of thinking.
I have a big ego. I think I'm great. I mean,
No. Obviously. I mean, you obviously know.
I mean, look, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm deluding myself, but whenever I check my stuff, it looks right to me. I mean, nobody else is checking it, so it's not like I get, like, and when they do, they don't give me any feedback that's at all, you know, it's very difficult to know.
So this is the question, like, one question I found that was kind of insightful was, there was a question that was, in your opinion, who is the most interesting American? And your response was Leonard Susskind, is a plumber, a late bloomer.
He's my hero. I mean, he's everybody's hero in physics. I don't know how to say it. It's like, I know he's not that.
So, okay. But just to give some background on who he is, you know, you said he's, you know, he's a plumber. He was a late bloomer. He solves all of physics. And I'm just curious, like, do you see yourself as becoming somebody like that? Because, you know, obviously you know a lot about physics.
I feel like honestly, I feel like my great work is like 10 years ago. I feel like I'm ready to die because I've already done what I've... This is true. I was really depressed when I was 34, 33. I was partly because of romantic trouble, but mostly really because I felt...
Underappreciated.
I felt just... No, I don't care about that. I felt I just done the best work I could ever do. I just done the greatest work in science ever. Like, I felt like I had done the best work in science since there was science. And I could just die because that's it. What else could I do to top this? I mean, I felt like I was just nothing. I was worthless.
Wait,
it's
wait,
really
I
weird.
I don't understand, because that's...
Yeah, I know. You think, oh, yeah, because you work for it for like 20 years. You're like, I have to discover.
No. What I don't understand is you say... You felt like you had done as good as you could possibly do. You felt like you had done made excellent discoveries.
I felt like I'd done my life's work. I could just keel over. I mean,
right. So you didn't care about the about lack of notoriety.
Oh, whatever. That always comes. Just wait long enough. I knew it was right. Okay, I don't want to say it. You know when you do something right because you can check it yourself. And when it's right, even if it takes like 50 years with Mendel or whatever, it's eventually going to get recognized. I don't give a shit about recognition. It comes by itself. It's a political process. I don't need to do anything for that to happen. That happens by itself. The thing is, I felt like I just peaked, and that was the end of my life. I don't know how to describe this because it's so weird.
Do you still feel that way?
No, not at all. I mean, it stopped when I discovered something else. I mean, it's like, it's just...
You know, I think a lot of scientists
report this, you know, after they write a major paper or they discover a big result, you know, they just get depressed. I mean,
no,
I don't.
My stepdad has gone through that kind of cycle of discovery. He's a mathematician, and he's gone through that cycle of like discovery and then like kind of like, emptiness, because what do you do next?
Yeah, right. It's exactly that. And if it's a big thing, you really go through it hard because you have to top it. I mean, there are people like look at Paul Cohen. He was, he solved the biggest Hilbert problem. He solved the set theory and the continuum hypothesis problem. Solved it in 1963. I don't think he's had a few minor problems, but I don't think he's done anything since then, because how can you top that? I mean, it's like, you know, he solved the I don't know, it's like there's no comparison. It's like, imagine if like
Watson and Crick or something.
Yeah, I mean, but they did. I mean, Watson never stopped. Crick never stopped. But and they also, I think, did fine work, exceeding perhaps even the double helix work in the 60s and 70s. Certainly Crick. I mean, he discovered the genetic code. I mean, he was one of the folks, and he had many, many other things. He's an extremely prolific scientist. Watson, you know, he became a director later in life, but he did a lot of experiments I forget what it was. He did some phage stuff, and I forget. I just read it recently. But yeah, when you discover something, you just feel like that emptiness. It's like, what do I do to top this? And it's like,
right.
No, it's stupid. It's just dumb. You just have to grow up and do the next thing. That only lasted like a year or two. But whatever. No, but I still think that, like, you know, when I'm dead, it'll still be on my gravestone. I don't know. It's maybe stupid, but it's like I always felt like, you know, when I'm dead, it'll be my something I did when I was 27 will be on there. I wasn't like 28. It'll be on my gravestone. That's it. And, like, the rest, nobody cares about.
So while you were on Quora, what did you get out of it?
Get out of it? What do you mean? What did I learn from?
So, I mean, was there anything that you learned that was particularly valuable? Did you meet anybody you consider a friend? Like, did you think about new ways of discourse?
No, I just did the same old propaganda I did on Stack Exchange, except now with broader topics and essentially infinite. No, it's a propaganda vehicle for me. I just view it as a way of making sure that the idea that I know needs to be get out there, it gets out there. And it also allowed me to do the truth thing, because I wasn't a truther before I was on Quora. I really wasn't. I just didn't believe in it. Not that I didn't, but I was agnostic. I was an agnostic on that. I just didn't think about it. And I became a truther after the Boston bombing, which was about a month after I joined Quora. Before that, my description was a theoretical biologist or physicist or something like that. And after that, I was like, okay, I'm on Medium here that has the opportunity for spreading out this truth. I don't listen to anybody on Quora. I don't read anything. I'm closed-minded entirely. I think the discussions there are very low intellectual level. I mean, every once in a while, there's an interesting thing I upvoted, but I think I've upvoted maybe like 100 things, and they weren't that good. And so it's like, you know, and it's basically a huge waste of time. I mean, but I feel it's a duty. I mean, I don't think Quora is doing me a favor by allowing me to write, because it's not like I'm getting anything out of it. I mean, that they're doing it to educate the public. That's really the purpose. It's not. I get absolutely. I mean, I met some nice people. I mean, they're nice, but I mean, I haven't learned anything. You want to learn something? Read the scientific literature. I mean, it's not. You're not going to learn anything from bullshitting. I mean, there's some things you learn, personal things or some such things, but that's not my interest. So, but as a propaganda tool, because it was uncensored and allowed hostility. Mostly, by the way, the reason they allowed hostility is simply because of insufficient moderation power, because they have a closed ranks of moderator. They've got, like, maybe, I don't know, my guess is 30 people are doing the entire moderation for the whole site. And with that...
So are you saying that you think if they had more moderators, it would actually be more heavily...
Yeah. Yeah, because I was sure, because at first I never...
Like, some of your stuff wouldn't have been stood for if more people would have seen it?
Oh, I probably would have been blocked earlier. I mean, because I've always been this confrontational as I am now. It's never changed. But I think there comes a point where they actually start to scrutinize
it takes a very long time before they find you, because there's so much stuff. I mean, there's so many users and so few moderators. And it's not like in other sites, the way they deal with that is by having moderator elections, but that poisons the moderator pool because you get terrible people elected. But in this case, it's the moderators aren't not much better, but they're so overworked that it's great. It's like essentially they're like the government that is underfunded and is starved, so they nobody there to do it. I think there's like 30 of them. I'm guessing. This is a guess. I'm totally guessing based on the size of it. Maybe they got more now. Maybe that's why I'm blocked. But the thing is that the rules are not any different from any other place's rules, but my impression was that they were never enforced. Because I would get into shouting match. I got into a shouting match with a fellow regarding some ridiculous thing about whether NP problems allow multiprocessors. Never got called on it. I was cussing up a storm. Eventually, somebody came and said, please keep it civil. I said, okay, sorry. And that was... So it was unmoderated. That's the reason why it was successful. I mean, successful for me, because I could say whatever I wanted. It's not... I mean, I don't listen, honestly. I really don't. I mean, I listen when I make a mistake, but that you know, and trivial stuff like that. I mean, I do occasionally. Everyone makes mistakes. I mean, in this stuff, I don't think so, okay? Because it's all very easy stuff. It's like, I mean, it's stuff you can't really screw up on, so... I don't know what to say. I think Quora was successful because it was less moderated than other sites. But I'm not sure if that's still true. And since I've been blocked, I don't really care, because obviously it's not true for me, because they're going to be paying attention to me now from now on. So that means it's not going to be useful for me anymore.
So what's next? Is it like back to Stack Exchange?
No, I'll just go into the library and write some papers or whatever. And this is not... It's not like... I mean, I wrote most of what I wanted to write on Quora anyway. I have gotten almost everything out of my system. I wanted to write a couple of other things, but they weren't major. There are some things in there. I gave them gifts because they were allowing free discourse. I gave them some gifts. There's some things in there that are really major, major research insights that nobody says. Okay, they are just not in the literature. If you go through my answers, there are answers in there that are just not. Flat out not in the literature. They are true. I mean, I should say they are true. With time, we will figure out whether they're true or not. But, dude, they're true, okay? Because there's confirming evidence already from other studies. But you don't have to take my word for it. Just wait 5 years, because they're in biology, and biology moves like lightning. So it's, you know, there's stuff in there that's original. Not that much, but it always could be more. But, you know... yeah, I mean, it's my gift to the site for letting me just blab on them. It's like, yeah, they're not doing me favors. I mean, I'm giving them good text, and it's not like it's, they don't want it. Good. I can go give it to someone else more deserving. It doesn't hurt me to not be allowed to be on Quora. Quora, as a forum, has an extremely strong format because it allows unlimited comments and the discussions are never shut down. However, the moderatorship thing, I guess, does exist. It didn't exist for my entire time there until this week, but I learned it exists. And if it exists, that means other people have been struck down before by moderator beasts. And I'm not the first to go, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, what's sad is that, you know, not just the fact that you've left, but, I mean, there's a guy that left... There was, you know, a lot of people liked him.
I haven't left. I've been blocked. Okay, if I were blocked today, I would be back. But I've been blocked, so I'm not. I've been kicked out. Okay, I haven't voluntarily left. There was another guy who was blocked.
Well, there were two guys that have left. One was, I think, his name's Jonas Luster, and then another guy, John Mixon, left. And those were both
Mixon. I remember him.
Yeah, he's a great writer,
but he's always. So propagandistic regarding 9/11. He can't discuss. But I remember him. He's a very good writer. Yeah. He left.
Yeah.
Oh, but he just left.
He left. Yeah.
He wasn't kicked out.
What's that?
He wasn't kicked out. He had other things to do.
I don't think it was other things to do. I think he got into an argument with somebody.
You're serious?
But I'm not.
Oh man, these are the canaries in the coal mine. Look, I purposefully am a canary in the coal mine. The moment I'm kicked out, I'm usually one of the first to go. Okay, And the moment I kicked out, you know, site is going to hell. Just because I'm just perfectly honest and I'm blunt and I'm not really that offensive. Because I'm offensive abstractly to ideas. I'm not really that offensive to people, okay? I've never had anyone get offended at me personally.